Your film is now ready to be shown.
Good morning. I'm Justin Hendricks, editor of Tech Policy Press, a nonprofit media venture intended to provoke new ideas, debate, and discussion at the intersection of technology and democracy. On this podcast, we regularly come back to questions about how to redesign social media networks to make them more democratic, pluralist, and pro-social. One hypothesis people have about how to do that is decentralization and the introduction of middleware, tools built to give users more control over their experience on platforms, and thus more autonomy in how they engage in public discourse. In this episode, you hear my discussion with one entrepreneur who is building middleware for Blue Sky.
I'm Rudy Fraser. I'm the founder of Black Sky Algorithms, and I'm a fellow within the Applied Social Media Lab at the Berkman Klein Center at Harvard University.
So Rudy, you and I are almost neighbors in Brooklyn, New York. Tell me about yourself. Tell me about how you came to be a technologist working in Brooklyn, working on Black Sky. What happened before?
I think I was always interested in technology. I, like a lot of folks my age and my generation, played video games a lot as a kid. I would say I was always a bit of a smart aleck, my mom would say. But it was always like encouraged to be clever. And my reward for getting good grades was a video game. If I got an A, I got a video game. That was the way that I always tried to get A's to get new video games. I played a lot of games growing up. And then I think I really got into computers because I wanted to, with early game consoles, you could use cheat codes. And then once you got into more like Xbox 360s and playing online, they didn't have cheat codes, but they had glitches and they had mods. And so I got into video game modding. And so like hex editing games, doing like Call of Duty 10th prestige lobbies, things like that. I think that's what, and then just being able to like impress my friends with having some crazy colored gamer tag or like having everything unlocked after a day or something playing the game. That was my reward system and motivating factor for a while. And I thought I could maybe figure out a career out of that. I think I was seeing around this time too, as a teenager, there was enough evidence to see that you could be in technology. There weren't people like that looked like me. And so I wasn't necessarily encouraged to go into tech. My mom wanted me to be an accountant or a doctor or a lawyer or something. But I was like, hey, I played Mortal Kombat, and in the behind the scenes credits, they were like, these people who make the games make six figures, like maybe I could do that. And yeah, so then just got my mind really set on that. No matter what happened, we faced a lot of housing and food insecurity growing up. We moved around a lot. I think in the city though, I probably lived in like 16 different places across Brooklyn and Queens and lots of different family members' houses and stuff. So as I was mentioning before we started recording, I graduated high school early, but I didn't apply to any colleges because I didn't think we could afford any. And I was like staying at my aunt's place at the time. And me and my mom ended up moving up to Canada. And I was like fighting to just get back to the city so I could go to a CUNY school. So I ended up going to City Tech, and lots of stuff was going on. Again, life was chaotic. So I didn't end up finishing school, but I was very determined, like I mentioned, I wanted to get a foot into the tech industry. And I ultimately ended up landing at a sports tech company, doing a kind of sales development job. But the promise was that if I could automate the job, then I could work on tech stuff. And so I ended up automating everything that the job did. And they created a role for me as like a IT operations kind of person. And I've basically been in enterprise. I spent basically the next 10 years in enterprise IT and rising up the ranks. The last job I was at before Black Sky and Paper Tree, which are my two projects, I was the senior director of business technology and IT for an automation company. And then they exited. And then I took that as an opportunity to go out on my own and do my own thing.
And City Tech, of course, has that great kind of program on gaming and media and technology. Was that some of the start in terms of where you got to do some of your first work on computer science?
I went for computer information systems the tech classes were the kind of the only ones that I really excelled in at the time. I didn't really pay attention to anything else, notably failed physics, but like web programming, I had a lot of fun there. I think I scared my teachers a little bit. I was always a bit edgy. Like I remember for like my database programming fundamentals class, I did a presentation on SQL injections and like hacking databases. But yeah, so I had fun.
So let me ask you, where does the kind of community organizing piece come in? The kind of concern about politics, culture, society. Was that always there, or did that come when you had the opportunity perhaps to reflect after being so busy building your career in enterprise IT?
I think for me, naturally, community care was always just there. It was how we survived. It was, I mentioned housing insecurity and food insecurity. There was always someone there to look out for us, and we reciprocated that when we could. And so I learned very early on that like in community, you have all that you need. And I thought that was very normal. And then I think as I grew up and went out on my own, and I found that you don't, like when I was growing up, I spent a lot of time outside. I spent a lot of time in my neighborhood, and you make these connections. And then now I live in like an apartment building, and it wasn't until my building got a WhatsApp group that any of us even knew what each other's names was. And I found that to be extraordinarily strange. But yeah, the community organizing stuff, I think I was always doing that. Even at the company I was working at before, I was one of the founding members of the Black Employee Resource Group. And I was their head of marketing and communication. You immediately recognize as a Black person in tech that there's not a lot of folks like you. You should figure out how to build community with each other and lean on each other as you try to navigate your careers. But even then, I started to get disenchanted with that Black faces in high places could really make the kinds of change that I wanted. I think I recently read someone talk about diversity being like the low-hanging fruit, and we couldn't even really get that. And there was tons of folks trying to push on those efforts, and we've now seen where that's gone over the course of time. But I was already seeing it was a lot of that stuff was like PR from the very beginning. So I think when I struck out on my own, I think I originally started trying to do whatever the traditional YC kind of startup, find a problem, solve it, build a business model around it kind of advice. And it just felt like it wasn't working for me. And it was honestly just making me pretty bummed out. I felt like I was still trying to fit into a puzzle and not being the right shaped piece. And that was the same way I felt when I was at this other organization. Yeah, I was like, most startups fail. If I'm going to fail, I'm going to do it in a way that feels right to me at least. And so what is an idea or a thing that I want to see more of in the world versus what is some problem that I think is some big problem that has a big market share? And the thing that I thought of was like community fridges. During the protests of 2020, the George Floyd uprisings, I saw community fridges everywhere, and I was like, all around Brooklyn, right? And I was like, why aren't there more of these out in the world? It's been a few years. There should be more, not less, if it was working. And if it wasn't working, what stopped it from working? What was the barrier? And then I just got really interested and obsessed with that idea and started looking into, okay, who was actually running the community fridges? Okay, it's mutual aid groups. What is mutual aid? What are the challenges those groups face? And then I started volunteering. I got known for volunteering with a bunch of different mutual aid groups in central Brooklyn until I found the one that I've stuck with for years now, We the People NYC. That's my chosen family right there. But yeah, we saw interesting challenges where I see this now, people assume that social justice organizations are very different from corporations, but in a lot of ways, they have a lot of the same challenges, but they solve them differently. And in some cases, they just don't have the kind of infrastructure that a corporation may have. Like mutual aid groups encounter conflict internally, but don't have HR departments. And decision-making is non-hierarchical. The project that I still work on now, but felt really called to do was called Paper Tree. And it was after I was a part of a mutual aid group who there was a large balance. A lot of these groups got a ton of donations back in 2020, six figures, This group had like about $80,000 that they were managing. Again, all volunteers. And there was a request from someone to, could we pay someone's rent? They were going to be houseless out on the street if we didn't pay their rent. And this group of volunteers is trying to be a good fiduciary of these funds that were donated to them. And you, what you ended up having was a bunch of 20-somethings working like volunteer, trying to decide, does this person get to stay in their house or not? And that context felt problematic. It felt like it shouldn't be that way. And then the folks that were saying like, wait, where I think we landed at that day was, okay, maybe you partially pay for the rent, but it's, you don't get to partial pay for rent. You either pay for the rent or you didn't pay for rent. And so from there, I was like, it would be interesting if you could have a bank account that was shared amongst people. And then ultimately, anyone could contribute funds and anyone could use it. And that was the V1 of Papertree. So what if your neighborhood had a bank account and anyone could put money into it and then anyone could make use of those funds, no questions asked, as long as there was like tightly scoped. So for Papertree, it was for food and groceries. So as long as you uploaded a receipt for groceries, it would be verified and then you would be able to use those funds. And that would be in replace of like SNAP benefits or something, or in addition to SNAP benefits, because things come up.
So it sounds like you're plumbing this, I don't know, intersection of ownership and mutual aid, community, decentralization. Makes sense then, of course, that you'd be interested in also in these decentralized protocols around mm-hmm. social media and how those are kind of coming along. Looks like you were an early user of Blue Sky. I saw in Wired number 51,921. But when you got on there, did you immediately think, I've got to build something here? Or what appealed to you about Blue Sky as a phenomenon? Were you a big Twitter personality or user? Did you feel the loss of Black Twitter the way so many did, and including individuals I've had on this podcast who discussed almost mourning, essentially, the loss of that environment? And I'll come back to this, I think, but also don't look overly glorify it like it was never great or perfect. People staked out their own claim on Twitter. But I guess maybe, I don't know, did you feel like you were there at the beginning of something new, as a fresh space, something to grab?
So to start with, I was working on Papertree, and then there's basically one thing led to another and the Papertree bank account got shut down. Everything ground to a halt at that point, and I needed something new to do. And like you mentioned, I was already adjacent to these decentralized Web3 type technologies, and people were making a buzz about App Protocol, which is the underlying technology behind Blue Sky. I saw some cool stuff in their documentation about algorithmic choice, people being able to choose what they see on social media, and decentralized content moderation. And I thought, at the beginning of new technologies is always the opportunity to do something really cool and interesting. So I signed up for their beta, and that's how I got in. And I was never a big Twitter user, to be honest. I had Twitter, I realized, since like 2012, but I did not use that account. That said, I think what I found, how I looked at it was, and I find it so very funny nowadays that like sometimes the weirder like trolls that we encounter are like, Black Sky is segregating itself from the network. And every social network I've ever used, if I go to the algorithmic like For You page or Explorer page, like Explorer page on Instagram, all I see is Black content. And so I just wanted to replicate that, but with the not having to train it or somehow explain to the algorithm that's the kind of content I want to see, is what if that was just, you could just start there. And so when I joined you couldn't make a custom feed yet. And so I had to wait a little bit. And then I'd launched Black Sky in a very hacky, very MVP way before custom feeds were even visible in the app. And then when I did it, the reason I probably stuck with it is that it was immediately the most popular thing I've ever built. Like Papertree now probably has about 100 users. You build any enterprise thing for a company, maybe you get even a 500 person company, you'd be lucky if 50 people use it. Usually have to like, their managers have to force them to use it basically for the most part. But Black Sky, immediately 1,000 people like used it within seconds. And so I was like, okay, this can have a big impact, and I can just keep iterating and working on it from here. And it was something that I was genuinely interested in using, right? Because like I mentioned, I like being on social media platforms and engaging with Black content and building community as in addition to that. So it felt like a really good fit. And then problems started arising, and I felt like there were solutions that were available to me. So I think Black Sky launched May 23rd, 2023. By July, we had people trolling the feed and kind of attacking, not even directly attacking the feed perhaps, but just making up weird narratives around Black Sky as a group. And it was very clearly threatening people. There were mass blocking campaigns, all kinds of things were going on. And so it made it clear that there needed to be more protections for Black users in particular. And in my opinion, like having this space, that this kind of this community space, and having a kind of guarantee, or at least a dedicated group of people and resources at the problem of keeping Black users safe, is like what has helped Black Sky grow to be as big as it is today. And yeah, and it was a tough journey for a couple years in the beginning. It wasn't always. Now there, Black Sky has been used by over 1 million people. It's tens of thousands of people who post in the feed every day, 350,000 monthly active users of the feeds. But in the beginning, it was very small. The narrative was always that Black Sky will never replace Black Twitter. People are going to go to all these other apps before they ever come here. Yeah, we're in the whole time, though. We're just building.
Early on in that period of, or the original sort of exodus from Twitter, you know, some folks were headed to Mastodon. Blue Sky seemed to pick up a little later, and certainly the large movement of people occurred even more recently, perhaps. But even early on, both Mastodon and Blue Sky, I talked to various experts, including a podcast like this one with a fellow named Dr. Jonathan Flowers, who talked about some of the kind of almost structural and cultural sort of obstacles to Black people feeling comfortable in these decentralized platforms. He was talking particularly about Mastodon, but even early in the day, or early in the Blue Sky days, there were some prominent Black intellectuals. I remember Tressie McMillan Cotton coming, for instance, and essentially deciding to leave the platform very shortly after joining it because of the kinds of trolling and response that she was receiving on Blue Sky. Has that improved, do you think, since Blue Sky has grown greatly? Clearly you're working on this problem, so you could say, yes, I'm part of the answer. But on the whole, is it your view that with scale, some of those dynamics have either maybe been addressed by Blue Sky, or maybe have somehow evened out in a way? I don't know. What would you say about the overall environment?
This goes into my own personal worldview and perspective, but it's my belief that anytime Black folks gather or congregate anywhere, it is perceived as a threat, and it will make people uncomfortable. And especially if those folks build up some way to have influence over the rest of the network, I think it is always seen as a threat. So in that capacity, if the problem is measured by trolls, that has just scaled with the rest of the network. But in my opinion, if it is measured by how the average Black user on Blue Sky feels, then I think that is greatly improved. And I do think that Black Sky has contributed to that. I think features, client in-app features that Blue Sky has created around reply gating and like anti-toxicity features has helped with that as well. Like those did not exist when Tressie was there. Like you couldn't remove a quote tweet. You couldn't stop people from replying to you. You couldn't lock a thread. Even in the very beginning of Blue Sky, you couldn't block people. A lot of that stuff just didn't exist. And labelers, like the Black Sky moderation service that we're now talking about, I only launched that in October. The labelers, they got rolled out in the beginning of January, and I watched and observed the challenges with community moderation over time, because I knew when I did roll out community moderation, it would get a lot of traffic, visibility, usage, and I wanted to do it from the beginning. And so I waited before I launched that. So none of those things were in place. And so it was really the Wild West at one point. And trolls certainly had their way. It was also very smaller. So if there was an issue within, even within a couple handful of people, everyone, the whole app felt it. We're talking about user 50,000. And so 100,000 users, like if three people are arguing, all 100,000 people are hearing about it. Especially the custom feeds, those launched later and they weren't always, adoption of them didn't happen right away. So people were still using the default, like it was called What's Hot, which was what preceded the Discover feed. And that was a very different experience. The people still laugh about it. A lot of Black Sky users now, they say, you can make Black Sky your default feed now. So you couldn't do that before. And so you always landed on Discover and you always felt, wow, this is not me. This does not reflect me. It's acting like it's a recommendation feed, but it's showing me stuff like anime women and stuff that I just like, maybe I just don't care about. I think there's certainly been a lot of improvements, but the other thing to keep in mind is that the threat will always exist. And then it's just like, how do you mitigate that threat? And I think the systems that are in place and that we're building contribute to that and are uniquely possible on the network.
Let's dig into that a little bit. So for my listeners who may not be on Blue Sky, I'm sure there are many, what exactly are you building? How would you describe it to them? What's the elevator pitch? And then I suppose, how does that work as a business or as an organization that can sustain itself? What does developing Black Sky mean for you and as an enterprise?
I will preface this by saying I'm bad at elevator pitches. I'm working on it. I'm the technologist that likes to be quiet for the most part and very much believe in show, don't tell. But yeah, what we're building is the real goal is we're trying to create a home for Black users on the network that is safe and self-governable and self-sovereign. And so what that means is we should be able to have a community space that is not separated from anyone else. It's a dotted line. I explain it as like dotted lines. It's not a hard separation. Anyone can view the Black Sky feed. Anyone can post into the feed, but I wouldn't recommend it. Black Sky as a community has been very on point about who they let amplify content via the Black Sky feed. And that's an important distinction for folks who are not familiar. Like, feeds are not like subreddits. So you're never exclusively posting to one. Your posts can show up anywhere. So it really is an amplification, an aggregator of content when I talk about the Black Sky feed. But yeah, so we're creating this space that is self-governable and self-sovereign. And what that looks like for us is that, A, there's the space you can go to. You can see the content of Black users. If you encounter anti-Black content or misogynoir, which is the intersection of misogyny and anti-Black harassment, anywhere on the Blue Sky app, you can report that content to the Black Sky moderation service. You can choose us as your moderators and we'll take an action. You could report it to Just Us. You could report it to us and Blue Sky. And we have the agency to take an action and then we can block accounts on your behalf to a degree. And we can also label and hide content from you so that you never encounter it. And we're doing that both from manual reports, so stuff that people send into us. Maybe there's a troll and one person encounters that troll. They can report it to us. We have a team of moderators that are going to review it, determine if this is anti-Black harassment or not, label the content or take some action on the account. And then everyone who's using us as a moderator is now protected against that content. Because we operate both the feed and the mod service, we can say, hey, this user is banned from the feed. They can't see any content from Black Sky. So now they can't use the feed to interact with people. They may be automatically blocked. Their account is labeled. It's essentially as close to taking someone's account down without us being able to take down their account as we can get to. And we also do this automatically. So because of the open nature of the network, we have automations that basically listen for every single time someone makes a post or updates their profile or their handle. And then if we detect a slur in any of that content, we can proactively label that content. That way there are people, if there's some egregious account like using any anti-Black slur, we'll action it before anyone even sees the content. And so that way it leads to the network feeling a lot safer for people. And so when we talk about that measure of how people feel versus their existence of the content on the network. We're not really taking down content. Blue Sky themselves will take down some content, but importantly, they're not taking down all of it. But the conversation, when you talk about Dr. Jonathan Flowers, I remember, you know, as he was a longtime user of Blue Sky and Black Sky, and the conversation was always around Blue Sky is anti-Black. Now the critique that we may get with Black Sky is, oh, there's too much sexual content, or that's really the biggest concerns now. It used to be like, oh, it was dry, it was boring, like there wasn't enough going on because there wasn't enough people. So I view that as a measure of success. If the complaint is that they're not racist trolls, if when we have the most popular custom feed and it's about Black community building, then I think we're doing something good there. And then I think the other piece, so the piece of building a business on this, there's always the risk and concern that Blue Sky could just pull the rug from under us, right? That is where we really need this, where the self-sovereign part comes into play. And it's really technical, but we basically have built our own independent implementation of Blue Sky's underlying technology called App Protocol. And so if the time ever came, people would be able to migrate, Black Sky users would be able to migrate their data over to our implementation, which we built from scratch and are able to continue maintaining. And so there'd be that continuity of the network, and that it's called risky, but it's de-risking that issue with relying too much on Blue Sky and their own services. And so now, so we have this space that we're self-governing, hoping to curate this vibe and this community. We're protecting it from threats, and we have a safety measure if the company that we're building a lot of this stuff on tries to, or just anything happens, right? They could be the target of censorship. There's been all this stuff in the news about how Blue Sky is this leftist haven, and that drew in a bunch of right-wing trolls as a result of that, which gave us more work. So yeah, anything could happen. So that's the fallback. And now I think we are trying to figure out the finances of this and how we can keep it sustainable. Black Sky originally was, all of the code is open source, and it was originally fiscally hosted by Open Source Collective. I just launched a corporation, Black Sky Algorithms, Inc., and got our first seed investment from our angel. I'm trying to raise additional funds for a seed round right now from other angels, potentially accelerators or incubators. But for the revenue, what we were trying to continue is, the way I've thought about this is both servicing intra-community and extra-community. So intra-community is just within Black Sky. So what can we, I think some folks think that we build just for Black Sky and we handle only external threats. So we're building just for Black users, and then we're handling just anti-Black trolls as the kind of content we moderate. But the reality is we're building for Black Sky, and we may host like sub-communities of Black Sky for free, but we're also charging other folks who want to use App Protocol services and have us manage it for them. And then, yes, we're handling anti-Black trolls from outside of our community, but there's also there are daily conflicts that we also have to manage of this like large growing internal community. But yeah, on the revenue side, so we've gotten donations, we get monthly subscribers, and I think there's been lots of talks about ads on Blue Sky. One of the kind of cheeky things that I did was people were saying ads weren't possible. So I built ads into the Black Sky feed, but the ad is for a donation to Black Sky. And so every time you view the Black Sky feed, there's like a 0.001% chance that you'll see a pop-up that is, hey, if you're enjoying the feed, please contribute. Similar to what Wikipedia does was the thought process.
It does strike me that there's a big opportunity here for researchers to study what you're doing and to study various other efforts in this layer of decentralized services that are popping up on Blue Sky. I assume that's one of the reasons why the Applied Social Media Lab up at Berkman Klein was interested in working with you as well. Are you already working with researchers? Are there folks that are reaching out to lend a hand? Generally, I would think this is a good opportunity to extend some of these ideas about protocols, not platforms, that a lot of people have been knocking around for a while.
So one group, I don't know that I can say the names as of yet, because we're still like in talks and stuff's not fully finalized. But one group was trying to, they have a cause that they're trying to amplify. And so they're interested in using the same moderation services we do, right? So we do moderation and we label content as anti-Black. Some folks have taken that because when you put that label on an account or a post, you see a little badge on it. Our badges say anti-Black harassment because that lets you know what it is. Some people have taken that and used it as like a badge for saying if you're a Virgo or your pronouns. And so it's a badge on your account. And so there's a group who wanted to use those same that same technology and implement it to amplify a cause. We helped them. We're hosting. We implemented that for them, customize it to their needs, and then hosted the service for them. The other group, they're doing research on health misinformation in Black and Latinx communities. And they wanted to work with us to identify, study the social graph of certain users and identify if they were following certain accounts that promoted health misinformation. And so we're trying to tailor something to them for them to automatically detect misinformation based on keywords on the network. And then, yeah, also like tie in kind of social graph information. And so that they could then, their goal is to then reach out to folks who may have been exposed to misinformation online and then ask them to participate in certain studies to see if they can get them to change their opinions on those things. And they were previously working with, they typically work with like the centralized companies to do things like that. Like they would work with Twitter in the past. And then with the Applied Social Media Lab, that, so I just started that fellowship and it's been really cool. Everyone's super nice, super smart, and super willing to get me tapped in and introduced to different connections. I think a thing that I'm exploring there and or what's interested me is at Proto, like we're a very small dev community. We're pretty insular. It's just, I think everyone that's on the, we all fit on one Discord basically. And so folks researching other protocols, I think you, when you interact with people in researching decentralized social media, they're usually working with other protocols. So I've been taking that opportunity as a part of the fellowship to connect with folks who are working in other ecosystems and see if there's opportunities for Black Sky to spread in and connect with those ecosystems. We already see interesting stuff today. Folks have projects like BridgeFed that bridges Mastodon, Noster, Blue Sky. An interesting, a funny kind of thing that happened yesterday was that same automatic labeler that we have that detects slurs detected a slur from an account that originally posted that on Noster. And then it got bridged from Noster to Mastodon, from Mastodon to Blue Sky. And then our slur detector detected it. And then we're now labeling content from Noster as just a funny thing with open social networks and open protocols, how they can all work together. But yeah, and then I also see opportunities for app protocols good for big scale social networks. And there is a need for alternative kind of mediums like group chats, encrypted messaging, and stuff like that. And so I'm interested in working with folks on that.
I want to ask you a little bit about the organization. Have you got folks that are working with you on Black Sky? Are you able to support that yet? Is that part of what the investment will bring? I don't know. And who are you looking for?
Yeah. So we have a team of 8 volunteer moderators, which is super tough work. Although they're volunteers, I believe in paying folks for moderation. Moderation is not fun. We're an all Black team moderating Black content. And so it is heavy, traumatic work. And so I want to compensate and have been compensating folks for that work. That group has scaled. Like, again, we launched moderation back in October. And so it quickly went from a 1-person mod team with 10 reports per day to a 8-person mod team with, we get about 200 reports per day. We've done over 20,000 moderation reports since October. So just trying to scale that up a little bit more. I think we're probably going to go to 10 folks. That will give us coverage for probably the foreseeable future. And we're looking for folks with trust and safety backgrounds. It moves so quickly. Everything is under development right now. So it's a little tough to bring in folks who do not have the experience with the kinds of, both train them up on the software and how content moderation should work. And as we figure out our own policies and things. So we're getting a lot of the systems in place to hopefully do scale that up a bit more. And so we're getting standard operating procedures in place, how-to guides, etc. And then the code is open source for the underlying code, Risky. And so we have 4 open source contributors who've been contributing code to that effort and putting in a ton of work. Folks who want to see an alternative implementation, there's the trans community on Blue Sky wants to be able to migrate to their own PDS, that is their own home server, essentially, that is independent of what Blue Sky has going on for their own reasons. And all that code base is built in Rust. So if you're a Rust developer, all this stuff takes interest to you, then certainly check out our GitHub and contribute there. And I think the two roles that I'd like to see for folks who are full-time and committed would be probably like a Rust developer and a trust and safety person. I think those are the two needed right now.
Rudy, I appreciate you taking the time to tell me about all this. And I hope that we can maybe talk in a year's time, perhaps, and see where things have got to, what types of opportunities have opened up, what types of challenges you've faced. I'm sure there will be some in the near term. Because anytime you're trying to do something as complicated as intervene on social media platforms where speech and ideas and politics are involved, of course, I'm sure that won't always be easy.
I mean, it hasn't been so far. It has been a wild journey. I say to folks regularly, all the problems I thought I would have or all the problems people told me I would have are not the problems that I have. But it felt so rewarding that people tell me regularly that they've met people through Black Sky, that this is like some of the most positive experiences that they had on social media in a long time. And it's very affirming. And all that makes me feel really good. So the challenging stuff, I'm able to push through it. I feel supported and have a big community behind me. So it's been great.
Where can folks go to learn more?
You can check out blackskyweb.xyz. That's our website. I'm on Blue Sky at rudyfraser.com. And the Black Sky account and moderation service is at blacksky.app over on Blue Sky.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode. I hope you'll send your feedback. You can write to me at justin@techpolicy.press. Thanks to Rudy Fraser. Thanks to my co-founder, Brian Jones. And thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Press.